Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast was brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. I'm here with Mr. Doug Gowdy, Director of International Trade at NAM, the National Association for Manufacturers. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's a great trade agreement. I'm happy to talk a little bit about manufacturing's role in it.
Fantastic. So let's get started and just have you tell us a little bit about yourself and also what NAM does.
Sure. I'm the Director of International Trade Policy for the National Association of Manufacturers, and in that I represent the NAM on bilateral and multilateral trade agreements, among other things, but predominantly the bilateral free trade agreements, the WTO, that sort of thing. So I've not had a real busy year, but I'm glad to see President Obama's note that he wants to resolve the outstanding issues and then move this agreement to Congress. And so we've sort of gone on overdrive to educate and inform, do some lobbying work on that the second half of this year. The NAM is actually the largest industrial trade association in Washington. We represent people who make things, manufacturing. Manufacturing is an important part of the U.S. economy. Manufactured goods are about two-thirds of our total exports, so it's a very trade-impactive kind of thing. But the NAM is a full-service horizontal trade association. We have about 13,000 members. They range in size from small mom-and-pop companies manufacturing a single item all the way up to major multinational corporations like Boeing or General Motors or, in fact, Samsung, who just joined the NAM's board of directors last week. The NAM, as I said, we're full-service shop. We represent on trade, on tax, labor, all sorts of things, and have about 160 employees here at headquarters working in the policy and lobbying world.
So let's start by focusing a little on the U.S.-Korea manufacturing relationship. Could you give us an idea of how much the U.S. exports to Korea in manufactured goods?
Yes, actually, Korea is our seventh largest export market, and it's a very important market in terms of exports of manufactured goods. As I said, about two-thirds of our exports overall are manufactured goods, but to Korea, almost 90% of our exports are manufactured goods. So it's a very key market for us. It's a developed market. It is an industrial market, unlike some of our other FTA partners, where we are shipping a lot of agriculture products and whatnot. It's a huge market, both for manufactured goods and also the services that are connected to those manufactured goods, which aren't registered in our deficit surplus numbers, our trade numbers. They don't show up. They're too difficult to measure, but they're a huge part as well. So we average, and we're down a little bit. You have to understand in all these figures that 2009, of course, was a disastrous year for the entire world. Everyone's exports were down. Trade was off 15 to 20% across the board for everyone, including noted exporters like Korea and China and Japan. But on average, we were trending around $27 to $30 billion the last couple of years in manufactured exports to South Korea, out of a total of about 38 to 40 billion. So there's a couple billion in there, about 10 billion actually, where that would be agricultural products and natural resource products as well. So it's very important to us. It's very, very key.
What are the leading U.S. manufacturing exports to Korea?
We export a great deal to South Korea. Machinery really tops the list. Electrical machinery, big machinery, the kind of stuff that you imagine the United States manufactures, big, giant, complex machines, a lot of power plant equipment, that sort of thing. Those are among our top exports. Medical instruments, medical devices, optical devices, very high quality, very scientific instruments, that sort of thing are also very large. Aircraft, of course, is a major export. Chemicals, plastics, also extremely major exports. Iron and steel products, of course, for construction and other areas. Pharmaceuticals are also very big. And believe it or not, we export a fair amount of cars, even though that's been one of the issues surrounding this agreement. Cars are worth a lot of money, so even if we only export a few thousand cars to Korea, it's still worth a lot of money. So in terms of value, cars are up there.
How does Korea rank as a destination abroad for U.S. manufacturers?
It is a major destination. As I said, it's our seventh largest trading partner by volume or by value, and it has risen up over the last 10 years from about 14th or 15th all the way to 7th. I could see it actually continue to grow even larger. Japan, as you know, is one of our larger export destinations. However, Japan's market is shrinking. Its economy is shrinking. Demographically, it's going to get smaller, not larger, and so its demand will decrease, whereas South Korea is a dynamic, growing, and fairly young economy. So I could see not only is it important now, but for generations in the future will continue to grow in importance for U.S. exports.
In the modern global economy, we all know that supply chains have become a key part of production. What does Korea mean to U.S. manufacturers in terms of supply chains and access to the rest of Asia?
You know, it's key. I was in Korea last week, and we had a meeting with the chairman of President Lee's Presidential Committee on Competitiveness, I guess, the National Council on Competitiveness. And we were discussing this very reason why this is such a strategic agreement. And he noted that it's really the bridge between Japan and China, the two largest economies in Asia. And the fact that once you're there and you are have an FTA and you have the investment provisions and IPR and all these things, you have joint ways to communicate, joint ways to export and import. It really is a very good beachhead to reach the rest of Asia. And the growth now is much more robust in Asia. Asia is recovering much faster from the global recession. And so having a foothold there is very key. It really is the bridge between everything. And as ASEAN starts to link up with China and Japan and Korea, as India starts to come on board, having Korea as a U.S. free trade partner is going to be, a very key issue.
Now to aim a question specifically at the FTA. The United States and Korea are working to resolve outstanding issues related to beef and autos before the G20 summit. Are you confident they will be successful?
I am confident, and I'll say this. As I noted earlier, I was just in Korea for the last week. A large delegation of U.S. businesses and associations went over, led by some of the co-chairs of the U.S.-Korea Business Coalition for Free Trade. We had services folks, we had manufacturing folks, we had the Farm Bureau and some other ag folks along. We had a good mixed delegation. Had some very good meetings with some very senior people. And tried to impress upon them that this is the time, that the G20 deadline that President Obama and President Lee agreed to back at the G20 in Toronto in June is real. We are not going to be able to let this slip. This needs to be signed on or announced on the 12th, 13th of November when the G20 ends. I am confident that we will resolve this. The Koreans are aware that something needs to be done. I think on the Korean side, the beef issue may be a bigger deal in terms of public scrutiny or public sensitivity than the auto issue. But I believe something will get done. What it is, I don't know. I know that the U.S. and Korean governments have been discussing this. I do not know if the proposal has been made yet. But certainly between the midterm elections in the United States on November 2nd and November 11th when the G20 summit begins, I have a feeling that USTR and the Korean Trade Ministry are going to be quite busy, and we'll be talking quite a bit.
One of the issues that members of Congress have raised with the passage of the FTA is the large number of vehicles that Korea exports to the United States. These numbers have been dropping over the last few years as Korean producers have opened up production in the United States. Do you see this trend continuing or reversing under the FTA?
I believe it will continue, and only because the United States is a mature auto market. It's not going to grow very much. We used to see enormous growth in the 2000s. Of course, that growth was fueled by a lot of macroeconomic conditions that could not be sustained, and driven by the house prices and whatnot. People were buying a lot more cars. We may be back down to a 10, 11, 12 million vehicle market as opposed to 14 to 16 where we were. But I do think that the U.S. is essentially a mature auto market, so competition is very fierce for very small percentages of market share. The Koreans have grown to a fairly good size market share in the United States. I think they're about 5.5% or 6% of cars, maybe 3% of trucks. Overall, they're about 5-6% of the U.S. market. About the same percentage of the Korean market that is foreign, not just U.S., that includes Japanese and European vehicles as well. But both Hyundai and Kia have opened a very modern, brand-new assembly plants in Alabama and in Georgia. both have, I think, about 300,000 vehicle capacity. They're making two models at each plant, a truck and a car. And those are their most popular models here in the United States. So Korea will continue, like the Japanese still to this day, despite having, I think, 12 or 13 plants in the United States. They still continue to bring in smaller niche models that they only sell a small amount of. But we have seen an amazing decline. I think it's over half or by half of Korean auto exports to the United States in terms of volume and value. As I noted earlier, we've seen $3 billion knocked down from their auto exports just in the last 3 years in terms of value. In terms of number, I think they've cut down to about half of what they were exporting 3 or 4 years ago. And this is a direct reflection of their manufacturing presence in the United States. Of course, you generally in the auto industry, particularly in large markets, you build where you sell because it's expensive to ship cars overseas. It's expensive to modify the vehicle to meet different standards or whatnot. So the United States automakers tend to manufacture in markets where they are. Ford, Chrysler, and GM are all building plants or building cars in Brazil for the South American market. They build in Europe for the European market. They build in Asia for the Asian market. Now, they may not be building in Korea, but there are plants in the nations surrounding Korea. And so certainly Hyundai and Kia would probably build another plant in the United States if they see the demand as necessary. But I do think that this will continue. I do not think we will see a surge in autos once the agreement is signed, largely because we have such a low tariff on our cars to begin with, 2.5%, that it's not really an impediment to vehicle exports. Of course, the pickup truck tariff in the United States is 25%, and that will take some time to come down, but neither Hyundai nor Kia sells pickup trucks, so I would expect them, like the Japanese, if they're going to begin to do that, would be building those trucks here in the United States.
Okay, now let's look at a relatively new market. Korea is making a strong push into the area of green growth. Do you see this as an area of opportunity for U.S. manufacturers?
Absolutely. Of course, green growth is one of these fantastic ideas that everyone likes because they don't know exactly what it is. But certainly the United States has a very strong presence and very strong lead in environmental technology, not just windmills and solar, but all sorts of even more impressive things that will come along in the next generation. And this is something that U.S. manufacturing is very good at, very strong at. We've seen the Chinese trying to compete in this, and certainly we are an innovative and knowledge-based economy. I think we'll do well. Korea, of course, would, like all nations, would like to remove their dependence on oil and gas as much as possible and look to alternative sources of energy, particularly since they don't have any of their own. They have coal, but they have no real gas or oil. They have to bring it all in. So I think the United States will find a very ready market here for environmental goods, green tech, and I think this agreement, again, I don't know what their tariffs are on those, but they are higher than the ones that we charge. So certainly I think the exports would flow from the U.S. to Korea rather than the other way around on that.
We tend to think of intellectual property rights as having to do with software, music, and movies, but it has a key role in manufacturing as well. Could you tell us a little bit about how intellectual property helps U.S. manufacturers and how it's addressed in the FTA?
Absolutely. Intellectual property rights, or IPR, IP rights, are basically, I think, the only thing keeping the United States from in the lead of economic growth. I mean, when people hear IP, they tend to think, oh, pirated software or ripped off movies or something of this sort. But the real truth is the United States is the global leader in innovation, and that is our area of competitiveness. We're not going to be able to compete with low-cost labor in China or elsewhere, but it is in inventing things and improving things that the United States really has a strong background, and I think that will be our future. And this protection of this, the IP rights, is key. We have written it into this free trade agreement in a way that we've never done any other free trade agreement. And I think that's a hallmark. When we pass this free trade agreement and it's implemented, that will then be the foundation for future trade agreements where we can continue to write that in. I mean, it's if you're listening to this as a podcast, you're listening on an iPod or something of the sort, you know that what Apple does on those is simply say it was invented in Cupertino, California, made in China. In other words, all the value added comes from the United States. That's who invented it. We provided most of the insides of the computer. It was just assembled in China. It's that kind of IP protection of those kinds of processes and thoughts and competitiveness building issues that I think are key, and this agreement certainly has a new gold standard of protection for those.
Korea and the EU recently announced that their free trade agreement would go into effect on July 1st of next year. How does the U.S. manufacturing export profile compare to the EU's manufacturing profile?
The United States and the European Union are both, as I said, manufacturing nations. Manufacturing is a key part of both of our economies. It makes up about the same amount of GDP. We are both high-cost, high-value manufacturing, where a lot of our value added comes from the intellectual property, the cutting-edge technology that we do. And as such, of course, we make about the same stuff. And, in fact, we ship about the same stuff to Korea, not at a, again, for trade geeks, at an eight-digit HS level. I haven't compared that. But I will say broadly, if you look at industrial sectors, we overlap with the European Union in a great many of them. I mean, they export machinery, we export machinery. They export planes, we export planes. Chemicals, it goes all the way down. Vehicles and vehicles, even, to say the truth. What I find interesting is we export roughly the same as the Europeans do to Korea. There are maybe a billion or two or three ahead of us in total exports. But if you look at their exports of manufactured goods to Korea, almost everything they ship to Korea is manufactured goods. I noted earlier that we had about a $10 billion difference between our manufactured goods and our total exports to Korea, that being food products and raw materials. The Europeans are only $3 billion off of that. In other words, almost all but $3 billion of their $40 billion exports to Korea are manufactured goods. So we are nearly $10 billion behind them last year, in 2008, I should say. We were $10 billion behind them already, and their exports continue to trend up in manufactured goods. Ours have flattened out. So this is an object of that's very strong concern to the manufacturing, to the NAM, our manufacturing companies here in the United States, because they're already ahead of us. Now, if you give them 6 months to a year head start where they're not paying 8-9% tariffs, and we are, that is going to absolutely shift the market to European manufactured goods for a great many items. They will choose a European manufacturer of a medical device or a pharmaceutical or something instead of an American one if there is a difference, if it's not the same multinational company. I know many of them are multinationals that are based in both countries, which sort of complicates my argument. But certainly we are very concerned about this and would face, particularly if Korea continues to push forward with other FTAs. You look at Canada and Australia, for example. And they're almost done with Canada, from what I understand. I know they're looking heavily at Australia and India. If you add Canada and Europe together, and we don't have an agreement, and they both do, what you've done there is you've threatened manufacturing shipments, largely from Europe, and agricultural shipments like wheat and corn, pork, beef, other things like that from Canada. You've essentially cut the United States out of the market completely because the Koreans will be able to bring in all of those goods from other nations. So it's a real concern, which is why we in the manufacturing world are pushing so hard to have this agreement done by the G20 and passed by Congress as soon as possible.
Are there any particular types of U.S. manufactured exports to Korea that are at especially high risk given the EU-Korea FTA coming out next year?
I would say probably machinery, electrical machinery, which are our top exports, and the Europeans' top exports as well. Optical, medical devices, pharmaceuticals, and chemicals are all in the top five exports for both of us. And I would say those are areas where very often there are European companies that are not multinational, American companies that are not multinational. They are domestic, essentially, competing against each other around the world. You give them, as I said, 8 cents on the dollar bonus, they're gonna take that market. And it's not just as simple as taking the market. It's also, for example, when I was in Korea last week, I was really sort of noted there are a lot of Western brands there. It's not closed off. Certainly there are. There's a four-story Dunkin' Donuts, for goodness sakes, in one of the shopping districts. Yeah, it's a fantastic I went there for coffee. And they seem to be mad about coffee. I mean, just every other store is a coffee store, it seems. But it's not just the shipping of the products. It's also that the first one into the market is going to take the best retailer, the best distributor, the best marketer. In other words, you're going to have that whole distribution chain locked up, and you're going to get the folks who are the best at that. And those who come in second, third, or later are going to be stuck with distribution chains that aren't as robust or aren't as good or aren't as respected, whatever have you. And that can just compound your problems on top of things because then you're dealing with folks who can't get your goods to the market or whatever else. So it really, there's no way we're going to be able to come in by July 1st of next year. We may not even have a vote on this until April, May, or June. But I hope it's going to be the fastest scrub of a trade agreement we've ever had, that we can implement it by the end of next year, certainly. But first things first, we've got to get this thing, the auto and beef provisions, taken care of, and we've got to get it up to the Hill as soon as possible.
Well, that's all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Sure. Actually, I just more on the side of sort of manufacturing and trade. I think a lot of Americans are listening to rhetoric in Congress and elsewhere are concerned that the United States doesn't have a manufacturing sector anymore. They focus on the halcyon days of the 1960s and 50s when big sweaty men in undershirts made stuff in dark factories. And of course, the United States actually is the largest manufacturer in the world by a fair, almost double, I think. I think the United States is about 22-23% of total global manufacturing output. If you measure everything the world makes, the U.S. is making 23% of it. I think Japan is second at about 11%. China is third at about 9 or 10%. So it comes as a surprise to a lot of people to know that the United States is, in fact, still a manufacturing superpower. We're just doing it with less people, largely because of increased productivity and increased efficiency year after year after year. Our factories are cutting edge, and what once took a factory with 100 people now may only take 10. Trade has not caused us to lose millions of jobs, as our critics might claim. It is essentially productivity, efficiency gains, and the move into very high-value, high-skilled engineering. And we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to manufacture more. 2008 was the best year we've ever had in manufacturing. We produced more in 2008 than we ever have, and we did it with fewer total manufacturing workers than we've done in a long time. Everyone in the world is losing manufacturing workers as they get more efficient. I think the number is about 15 million in the last 10 years that China has lost in manufacturing. We see them as our critics again claim we're shipping our manufacturing jobs to China by the millions. Well, they're losing manufacturing jobs by the millions. We're not shipping our jobs there. Certainly, there is some trade with China and other countries where we have had some job losses in certain sectors. I won't deny that at all. We have a very serious problem with China. And that's a problem. But free trade agreements, as I say, we have a trade surplus in those. And that is the kind of thing that if we're going to really grow this economy, more trade is what we need, not less. And this is a very good agreement. I mean, President Obama has brought in his National Export Initiative, his idea to double exports within 5 years. 2/3 of our exports are manufactured goods. Without opening new markets to American manufacturing, we're not going to meet that goal. So this is an excellent way, probably the best way, to jumpstart that would be Korea and also Colombia and Panama. I can't not say that all three of these agreements need to be passed, but Korea is going to be worth, I think the ITC says, $10 or $11 billion in increased exports. Most of those are going to be manufactured goods, so it's a great agreement.
Thank you so much for your time today, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
For more information about this episode, this podcast, and upcoming KEI events, please check out our podcast page at keia.podbean.com. As always, please feel free to send any questions, comments, or suggested podcast topics to me at podcast@keia.org. I'd love to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Well, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye.